You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 7 April. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Chantal Marx, lots of talk around infrastructure, around construction booms. Where do we invest to gain some of this? Is there opportunity out there? Jonathan Sherry on why we ignore long-term warning signs. And then Henry van Deventer, he's from Liberty. Customer response to virtual financial advice. I'm interested to how they operated during the lockdown. Because, of course, you know, your long-term insurance products, they are sold, not bought. And I mean, the agents weren't able to get out there. Yesterday's poll, we asked you a very simple question. Are we in a risk-on environment? 62% of you, myself included, said yes, but careful. 20% said yes, it's a go-go, and 18% said nope, it's a trap. MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. GrowthPoint's healthcare fund tops $3.2 billion with the CentoCare hospital acquisition. I've got to be honest, I didn't know GrowthPoint had a healthcare fund. It's part of GrowthPoint. In time, I imagine, when it gets big enough, it might list separately. That will be interesting. And Business Day, JC investigates PPC trades amid insider trading suspicion. Remember, they made the announcement. We chatted with the CEO, but the share had been running ahead of that announcement, and the JC is investigating. Morning markets, the US was red, but only slightly. S&P off 0.1, NASDAQ off 0.05%. Asia green, Sydney up 0.3, as is Tokyo. Commodities green, gold 17.38. Rand 14.50. Top 40 looking for a red open, about a third lower, or 220 points.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chantal Marx. She is head of research, F&B, wealth and investments. Chantal, morning. Appreciate your time. I mentioned in the intro, lots of talk around construction, around infrastructure spend. We've certainly seen, I chatted with PPC last week, and in their update, they said that they were seeing double digit growth from, what was it, the July to February period. Your take, I mean, is there opportunity in the JSC? We don't have the same sort of size of construction industry that we used to back in the last boom around the World Cup, but we still got some of the sort of aggregate suppliers and cement and the like. Opportunity here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not only PPC that's been seeing an increase in activity, but when you speak to the likes of a Raubex and look at the announcements that came through on Sains in terms of new orders, order book growth for a company like Wilson Bailey Homes has also been decent. We've also seen some good demand coming through for equipment. Some of the kind of the retailers in the space, Cashbuild and Ital are already seeing an increase in demand. And there are many small companies that used to be much larger companies that you can still invest in. I mean, I was scratching through the support industries and construction this morning, and it was like a blast from the past. I mean, hold on to your hat. Argent, in Simbi, Invicta, Udeco, Trelidor. The list is actually quite substantial. South Ocean Holdings, electrical and cables. I mean, these are the types of industries that will benefit from a widespread infrastructure rollout. Even a company like ARB Holdings that has a big lighting wholesaler could benefit from an investment in an area like housing, where we've already seen JVs between government and the likes of a Bolwin. There's another company that will benefit from an infrastructure rollout. So the list is quite endless, or it's quite large. It's not endless. I mean, from my quick calculations, I've identified about 30 companies that could benefit from directly, actually, from infrastructure rollout. And And then, of course, infrastructure lifts economic growth, and there are knock-on impacts everywhere. And I think some of the indirect beneficiaries are banks who provide the financing for some of these projects, transport, which would move around workers, and hospitality, which would house some of these workers and project managers and engineers. So a lot to get through, but a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, and your list, I mean, your list was giant, and as you, I mean, some of them were, Argentina, South Ocean. We typically think of construction companies. Of course, they've got project execution risk. If I go with a Trellidor or an ARB or something, they don't have that project execution. It actually, in some senses, it de-risks the potential investment because they're going to sell their lighting or their cabling, and if the project has cost overruns, that's not their problem, that's the builder's.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a very good point. It's almost a slightly safer space to invest in. And I think that's also why I like these, the retailers, in this space in particular. And it further de-risks if you are going to, if you're going to look at a retailer like, for example, Etaltal, where they would be beneficiaries of, for example, a housing rollout. But the company is also has a very substantial, private investment footprint. So there you could also diversify your exposure in that way.
Yeah, I love that. A giant list for folks. When I thought about this and I tweeted it last night, you know, my thought was sort of PPC, Kumba, Iron Ore, but actually that list is giant. And there's a bunch of really quality little stocks there that could do well. As Chantel says, blasts from the past for some of them, but they're still there. They're still listed. Chantel Marks, Head Research, F&B Wealth and Investment. Appreciate your early morning time.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place? Offshore, while earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP. Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Jonathan Cherry. He's a futurist, one of those folks who looks into the future, not a sort of a tarot card, but looking in and trying to work out what those trends are going to be. Jonathan, appreciate your early morning time. I mean, one of the trends we see is that people look into the future. They make predictions and we ignore them. I mean, the pandemic, I mean, you know, Bill Gates and others have been talking about it for a decade or more. The Suez Canal blockage has been talked about for a number of years. We see it, but we don't do anything about it. Why are we ignoring these risks, which are patently at some point coming down the line?
Yeah, I mean, add to that list climate change and income and wealth inequality. We know that these things are a huge issue. I guess for me, Simon, the reality is that our world is based on certain assumptions. And one of the assumptions that we have is that growth is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So it's growth at all costs, and the world expands, and our economic systems are based on that. So if then something unfortunate comes along like climate change and you start realizing, well, you can't just grow indefinitely, you can't just extract minerals out of the ground without consequences for society and for the planet, well, then we're already like completely all in on the original assumption that we had when we started this whole thing. So now it's very difficult to try and deleverage the world economy from the fact that it is built on production that extracts value from the earth. So that is a very difficult thing to do. It's the system is interconnected, so now it's quite difficult to do. The same with income inequality.
Yeah.
How do you now shift the entire definition of what capitalism is to now be more inclusive? And I think many people are starting to say, listen, this is unsustainable. We need to look at alternatives. Namely, the World Economic Forum is calling for the Great Reset, they call it. But again, it's like, well, how do we practically do that? It sounds good in theory, but it's hugely complex. Everything is interconnected. And I think many people are even looking at the World Economic Forum and saying, listen, that's the agenda of the elite. You know, there's certain people that are going to benefit from this. Why should we believe that? And I think that's one of the challenges. It's who do we believe? There's a lack of trust in the world. It really is a situation where we can see these disasters coming, but I think practically we don't necessarily know what to do about it.
Yeah, and that trust, and you know, a lot of folks was, you know, turned to the previous American president, but truthfully, that distrust, you know, predates him by plenty, and it's a sense of, well, you know, these experts have an agenda, and to your point, they want to take away my comfortable life. And with respect, you know, I mean, even, you know, the pandemics, I mean, yes, it arrived in 2020, but you know, I found a paper online where people were talking about it literally 19 years ago. It's that lack of that sort of deadline out there. And as you say, we're enjoying where we are now. And you're saying, well, something that's going to happen. And you know what? It might not even be your lifetime. And maybe we're not quite right about the math or the process. It's just simpler to ignore it and focus on tomorrow rather than that longer term process.
Yeah, and I think there's a saying that the hardest thing to change is someone else's mind. And I think that's exactly it. People have got an ideology which they hold on to, and they just doggedly just believe in this thing no matter what. Because to actually admit that you're wrong is incredibly painful.
Yeah.
And, you know, then people make up stories. And my favorite is the fact that Bill Gates is somehow involved in the pandemic because he foresaw this. You know, he predicted it. That's nonsense. As you say, people have been talking about this as a risk factor for decades now. And it's the same with many, many cases. But I think, yeah, this lack of distrust, because there is inequality when it comes to access to information still. There's inequality with people's ability to process that information and to believe it and to think critically about these things. And because of that, people then just, instead of looking at the facts that is put out there by people who have researched these things, they create their own realities and they create their own facts as to what the real reason could be. So, yeah, I think the world really has got a major trust problem. We just don't know who to believe. We don't know what the right source of information should be to really make the changes that are so needed in the world.
And so what's the solution? I mean, an obvious one, you know, we need to have an open mind. That sounds really easy, but there's a giant but behind it. And I mean, I can almost see the Suez Canal in 6 months or a year, we've moved on. I can see in 5 years with the pandemic behind us sort of not worrying about the next one. I mean, we can – It just looks almost as if it's going to take a really significant, I suppose, a pandemic as we're in right now to wake us up. I mean, does it? Does this pandemic sort of shake us out of our comfort zone?
Yeah, in many ways, I think it does. And in many ways, it doesn't. I think so many people are wanting to go back to the way things were. Mm-hmm. But I get a sense that people are starting to realize that taking responsibility for your own wellness and well-being is not such a bad thing to do. I think we're starting to realize that our hyper-consumption of goods that we can't necessarily afford might not be such a sustainable idea. So I think to your point, you know, how do people change? People change by going through an experience. They have this experience and they realize, actually, there is another way. There is another path which might be better for me. And hopefully what this has taught us is that the world is interconnected. We do need to take care of our communities, not just ourselves. We do need to support locally made products, locally designed products and services. And hopefully through the process of understanding what the implications are of ignoring those things, we can make that change. But it takes time. It's not something that just, you know, you flip the switch. Again, you've got to change people's minds. And to change someone's mind is incredibly difficult. But once they've had the experience and they realize that the old path is just no longer sustainable, then yes, they will change their minds and their behavior will follow suit.
But I love that. People change by going through an experience. And I think that is perhaps the key point here. Jonathan Cherry, appreciate your early morning time.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Henry van Deventer. He's Chief Specialist for Device Model Design at Liberty. Henry, morning. Appreciate your early morning time. 2020 for the insurance industry with agents out in the, you know, normally out in the streets selling products, long, short-term insurance, must have been an absolute crazy year moving to an online environment. Some of the lessons that you've picked up from the year, I mean, how did consumers find sort of online financial advice? I mean, did they prefer it? Did they find it difficult? Was it effective for you and your teams?
You know, Simon, that's a great question. And I think it's not only a question of how did consumers find it. It's a broader question also of how did advisors find it? And were they ready for that? It's quite interesting. McKinsey released a study at the end of last year, and they found that globally in January last year, before the pandemic, 90% of advice was being given face-to-face. Once the pandemic hit, 4 months later in May, only 5% of advice was still being given face to face. And in South Africa, that was zero. I mean, you know, going into level 5, level 4 lockdown. And in a separate study, McKinsey also found that once people start getting advice virtually, more than 90% of them choose to continue getting advice that way because it's just so much more convenient. You know, it just makes sense. Yeah. Who wants to spend time in the car to go and see an advisor or have an advisor come to the office and chip away at their work time? If you can do it like this, it's a no-brainer. So the world has shifted. And I think, as with anything, what has been seen cannot be unseen. You know, once you've had something be more convenient. Going back to having it be less convenient doesn't really make that much sense. So yeah, the shift has been profound. And if you were ready for it, and if you can provide a meaningful, you know, virtual advisory engagement, and yeah, you know, what does that mean? That's quite an important question. Then that's certainly the way that the world will be working going forward.
Yeah, and my previous guest was just saying we change by going through an experience. I mean, a lot of folks would, when I say a lot, let's be honest, most people have never done financial advice virtual. Now that you've done it, you think like, hey, that wasn't so bad. Is it perhaps also if I've got an existing relationship with an agent and a client, that easier than perhaps forming a new relationship with someone who you don't yet really know? I mean, easier for that existing relationship?
Look, I think it absolutely is. I mean, ultimately, the value of relationship is not only in familiarity, it's also in somebody that understands you and knows you and has a firm handle on what your needs are and what it is that you want to do. And I mean, that thing is almost priceless. So you certainly don't want to forego that. That's one of the reasons why, certainly at Liberty, we're spending a great deal of money to equip those advisors with those relationships with hopefully a market-leading virtual advice experience. Because it's easier for a client, you know, to have somebody that knows them, maybe stumble a little bit through the technology as they get familiar with it, than to speak to a complete stranger that's a little bit more au fait.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, there's big advantages to it. I mean, as I'm thinking now, you know, typically you sit down with an advisor and they crunch some stuff and they turn around and show you their screen and the like. This can actually become fairly interactive. It can actually perhaps be a lot more sort of data driven and actually a much better in terms of what's been shared experience.
You know, Simon, you're so right in saying that. Although I know there are a lot of people out there when they hear data-driven financial conversations. Yeah, there's a sort of, you know, that and the idea of suicide often go together. important as that principle is, I'm reminded of a little factoid I picked up in the States a few years ago. They found in America, people on average better understand what their mechanics tell them than they understand what their financial advisors tell them. Although it's possible to have a really complex data-driven conversation, I think the great thing about really good technology is not the fact that it makes things more complex, but that it makes things easier to understand, easier to follow, easier to participate in. And that really very much, it's a little bit like an app on a phone. You don't have to teach to use an app. And that very much is where we're focusing at the moment. You know, we believe for virtual advice to be great in future, you know, it needs to be exactly what you said, easy to understand, easy to collaborate with and to participate in. And ultimately, I mean, if I look at a great advice process, they do two things. You know, firstly, they help people understand the consequences of their decisions. So if I do this, show me what will happen.
Yeah.
Okay. If I do that, show me what will happen in a way that I can understand. And the second thing they do is they help people manage their expectations, which was a huge thing over the last year. Okay, so if I invest my money to get this sort of a return, what's the bad stuff and the good stuff that can happen? And how will I know whether we're on track? And shifting the conversation more towards that sphere. And just by simply having a framework of expectation, investors on average are 1.5% per year better off because they're less prone to sell at the bottom and buy at the top.
And I get you, and that's our future. The work from home debate is going to carry on, but I think, you know, in future, financial advisors are going to say, do you want to meet or do you want to do it virtual? We'll leave that there. Henry van Deventer, he's a chief specialist for advice model design at Liberty. The show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 32, a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Jacksonville, Florida. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial service provider, license number 50483. A poll today, which we're asking on the MoneyWeb Twitter account at MoneyWeb. We're chatting with Jonathan Cherry there around why we ignore long-term. Is it distrust of experts? Is it denying the good times are going to end? Perhaps it's short-term focus or rigid views? Have your say on the Twitter. You'll find it at MoneyWeb. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app at 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole, Masekhla, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.